was a good start to the day, some good thoughts. I have some thoughts this morning that I will move through very quickly. If you want a list of the scriptures that I have this morning, I'll give you a copy of those. Cover a lot of ground. This is something that I don't preach a lot of messages on. Our pastor does not preach a lot of messages on. We don't preach on it a lot because basically it's a no-brainer. Really, if our hearts are right, which is what our pastor preaches more towards our hearts than anything else, these things will be very simple for us to comprehend, and they're not all that deep of things. And for that reason, they don't deserve a lot of attention oftentimes. But nonetheless, I wanted to bring about some things on the idea of clothing, because many have the impression that there's only maybe one verse in the Bible on the whole subject, and there are numerous. We're going to have to move fast just to introduce them on a surface level. We're just going to very lightly introduce them on a surface level. Clothing will not make you holy. It will be a result of holiness, but it will not make you holy. And that's important to stress. It's very important to stress, and we'll conclude by stressing that again. Clothing will not make you holy. In the Bible, there were garments of a priest, and spelled out very particularly in Leviticus and Exodus, and we'll look at some of that. There were garments specifically of widowhood, mentioned in Genesis 38:19. There were garments that were specific to Israelites. In fact, the Israelite was to have a blue stripe on the cuffs and borders of their garment. That was something that God commanded Israelites to do for a symbol of fidelity, and a symbol of them being a separate people, as was mentioned in the devotion this morning. For whatever reason, they were not to question the blue stripe. God commanded it. It was a blue stripe, you know. That's just what he said. It was simple. He said blue stripe, so we do blue stripe. We don't do red. We don't do purple. That's what he told Israelites specifically. He said, I want the children of Israel to have a blue stripe. And so that's what they did. And you find that in Numbers 15:38-40. But particularly the contended topic is man versus woman in Deuteronomy 22. This is what is thought by many to be the only verse on the subject, which is not true. Deuteronomy 22:5. Says, the woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all that do so are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. That's pretty strong language, abomination. If I'm going to refer to the original languages a lot, not because I'm a wise man, not because I don't feel our English Bible is adequate, but because I feel as though our language is inadequate. Our Bible is the best Bible that we have in the English language. But you have to understand that some of the original languages were so particular. It's the equivalent of oftentimes if we had to translate into some new language the automobile. And in our language there's car, truck, van, bus, motorcycle, and the language we were translating into only had the word car. We would have to refer to everything as car when we spoke to that people. And that's a very real translation issue. Not only is that an issue, but the other issue that we have is since 1611, our English language has changed so much that you would not recognize our English language. So oftentimes we try to better define English words, and sometimes we try to better define original words for that reason. We have this difficulty also in Deuteronomy 22. The word pertaineth there really has the sense of that which equips a man. She will not wear that which equips a man, particularly equips him to his task and to his life, which is a certain clothing that particularly relates to his active life. And we will visit that later. And then it says, he shall not wear her garment, which is her clothes. And it's a very simple thought. You've heard it many times. But obviously, what pertains to a woman is obviously, it would be an abomination for a man to wear a dress. That's obvious. But to say that it would not be an abomination for a woman to wear that which pertains to a man is a ridiculous thought. That would be as dumb as looking at Ezekiel chapter 20 and saying, thou shalt not kill thy neighbor, but it's okay for your neighbor to kill you. That makes no sense to read the Bible that way. So what pertains to one is not to be worn by the other. It then concludes that one thing does necessarily pertain to each one. Something does pertain to each one as a clothing. And you've already said that one that the woman wears cannot be worn by the man. And that a particular thing pertains to the man except when it relates to you. That you can't say that. That doesn't work. But moving on from that, that is thought to be the one verse. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that one verse. We could dissect it in the Hebrew for a long time and draw a lot more out of that. But she will not wear that which equips a man. Along that same line, let's look at the evidence in another passage in Job. In Job 38 and chapter number 3, also the exact same word is used by the Lord speaking to Job in Job 40 verse 7. We will just turn to one of those because they're identical verses. In Job 38 and verse 3, God comes and speaks to Job. Job's been saying all these boastful things like, oh, if I could just talk to God, if I could just tell him what was wrong, if I could just speak to him. And God shows up. And God says, gird now thy loins like a man. Gird yourself the way a man girds himself. So there is a way in which a man girds himself. And it is a way in which he can work the fields. It is a way in which he can do his job. There is a way in which a man is girded to his tasks that were given to him. His tasks were given to him in the garden. The Bible says in Genesis 3:17-19 that a man was going to work and labor, and he was going to plow his fields, and he was going to eat his bread in the sweat of his brow. That was the punishment given to man. His realm was going to be a hard realm, fighting the ground that he cursed with his sin. And so the man's girding relates to his work. And we see in Job 38 and verse 3, gird up now thy loins like a man. The way a man girds himself. So we see that there's a way in which a man is to be girded. Just as we read back in Deuteronomy 22:5, that a man has a particular clothing which is his equipment. You will not wear that which equips a man, which specifically equips him for his day and his tasks and the things that pertain to him. And he said that is an abomination if you do that, if you wear what specifically equips him. Now I know throughout all generations of time, people have dressed in all different ways. And also, throughout all generations of time, there's been good and evil. There have been those that have been abominable and those that have not. So you can't really, you can't look at history that way and say that, well, just because there was a particular, you know, you can find evidences that people didn't always dress well. You can find evidences of generations that wore head coverings and didn't, and that doesn't change what the faithful did through the years. Just think about it today. If you look at the news media, if you pick up magazines, and if you pick up books, are the Lord's churches in any of those books, magazines, television shows? They're in none of them. They're excluded from all media and records. So you can't judge things by what you might pick up in a history book. It's not accurate to what God has commanded his people. You will, even if you pick up a book that records Baptists of our day, it will speak of those of Billy Graham. It won't speak of Eugene Clark's and Don Titus's. not there. So you can't judge it by books that you pick up. In fact, really, to use any other history book than the Bible is ridiculous. Shakespeare has only really 300 existing manuscripts. The Bible has 10,000 Latin, 6,000 Greek, 55,000 quotations in other pieces of literature. There is nothing that even comes close to matching the historical record of the Bible in its preservation. So we look to this here. Moving on, I want to mention also the evidence in the priest's garments. If you turn to Exodus chapter 28, and God commanded the priest's garments. And again, we're moving quickly. I will give you a copy of these scriptures if you want to look over them yourself. It's not my point to jump on anyone. Most of you, I don't see much outside of church. I don't know who dresses what way and who doesn't, and I really don't make it my business. I don't judge anybody by that. I don't feel different in any way. I just want to answer those that would say there's only one verse that you Baptists hold on to, and that's just not true. Exodus 28 and verse 42 says, "And thou shalt make them linen breeches to cover their nakedness. From the loins even to the thighs shall they reach." They were to have breeches that they went from here to here underneath their particular robe, because it goes on to mention that when they climb up to the altars, that their nakedness would not be discovered in any way. These breeches are mentioned several other places, also in Leviticus, several times in Exodus, also in Ezekiel 44. I want to read it there to you also. These breaches pertain to their particular task that they had. In Ezekiel 44, they had gotten away from doing things properly, and it was supposed to be linen breeches, and they were worshiping incorrectly, and Ezekiel the prophet was speaking to them. And in Ezekiel 44 and verse 18, he says, "And they shall have linen bonnets upon their heads, and they shall have linen breeches on their loins. They shall not gird themselves with anything that causeth sweat." They weren't to wear durable breeches like what somebody working in the fields were to wear. They were to wear linen breeches because their work was a holy work that they did in the tabernacle. But it was an apparel just for that. It was a garment just for that purpose. I know many say, "Oh, they all wore robes." They did. That's right. They all wore robes. They all wore overcoats. And they were girded different ways for different tasks. I believe that it's evident that they were girded different ways for different tasks in the evidence of a silhouette of a man. And we won't turn and read it for the sake of time, but in Genesis 24, 63 through 65... Isaac was recognized as a man. They couldn't tell who he was, but he was recognized as a man at sunset out in a field. Also in 2 Samuel 18, 24 through 28, there were two messenger men running long ways off that the watchman saw on the wall, and they recognized that both of them were men as they were running. They could tell as they were running in their silhouette that they were men. So there's evidences in other passages that there is a difference, and I believe the difference is in the silhouette of the garment. You can let the Holy Spirit convict you however you want on that. Settle that between you and the Lord, but I believe there's a difference in the silhouette. Also in the New Testament, there's not a few things there. 1 Timothy chapter 2 is one passage. Again, in 1 Timothy, we have the issue of our language barrier. The English language, if you study grammar, is a very ignorant language. When the Greek language is a language that is so deep. It is so amazing to me. An English sentence, you can throw an English sentence in a bag and shake it up and spill it back out, and it'll say the exact same thing no matter what the word order is, because the spelling of each word changes to tell you whether it's the subject, the verb, whether it's passive, whether it's active. I mean, you can't make up doctrine in the New Testament because of how well God preserved His word in such a particular language as the Greek language is. I find it very wonderful just to look at. In 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9, in like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel. The word there, apparel, our English word apparel, is now used just for anything. Apparel is just anything you put on. Originally, we get our word somewhat from the Latin word prepared and somewhat from the French word apparel, and those words mean much more than just anything you put on. The Latin word prepared and the French word apparel are words that relate to formal wear. It's a very different word. And the Greek word that's used here is not used anywhere else in the New Testament. Not in any other place is this particular Greek word used in our New Testament. And the Greek word is kata stole. It's made of two words, kata and stole, only found in this verse. Usually I don't trust the dictionaries. I don't trust Strong's. If you like to do a lot of Greek study and you get out your Strong's, that's Strong's opinion, by the way. So I don't trust Strong's. I use it as a reference tool. I use it to know where in other places in the Bible that word is used, and I let the Bible define that Greek word for me. I don't trust Strong's to do it. He will lead you astray at times, and he'll be so vague that you can pick any definition that you want to pick. Also, Strong's only deals with root words, by the way. He does not delve into tenses, voices, or anything else. So there are some great limitations to just referencing Strong's. It is a good reference tool to get you started, but beyond that, you'll be led astray. So I tried to reference this in other passages, and I didn't have much, I wasn't having much success, because it's not, it only occurs once in the New Testament. But as I was reading about other garments in the Bible, I was reading about the scribes and how they loved long garments. They liked to be showy. You know, they felt longer was better. And, you know, in a way, more modest is better. In a way. They thought it made them holy, which it will not make you holy. You could go out tomorrow and buy all new clothes. It would not make you holy. And that's important to note. But as I was reading about the scribes in Mark 12, verse 38, in Mark 12, verse 38 says they like to go in long garments. They make their robes longer than everybody else's robes. They try to, you know, look like they're much more holy. And I found there the Greek word stole, which was a part of that other passage, which is part of that word kata stole in 1 Timothy 2, 9. That word stole translated long garment for us by the Bible. The Bible telling us that that's what that means. It means long garment. Well, the word kata I know from my studies about women's hair. You'll find that one in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, another very contended passage. But the word kata means down. It's a preposition. It means down. So he says there, if we look back at 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, he says, in like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, a long garment, down. It's interesting when you look at it in the Greek. But it also, if you were to research English history, you would realize that that word modest apparel there relates particularly to formal wear, which would have been long anyhow. We would have no issues We now use that word apparel in our modern English day for formal wear. That would be the a better look at that. Lastly, I want to turn to the sister passage to 1 Peter chapter, or the sister passage to this, which is 1 Peter chapter 3. Some of the same thoughts are brought about. Again, I've mentioned these things will not make you holy. They will not make you holier than anyone else. They will not make you better than anybody else. And that's why I want to close with 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3. Says, "Whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of hair, wearing of gold, or putting on apparel." This is your most important adorning. It doesn't happen in front of the mirror. It happens in front of this mirror. The most important adorning you do on Sunday morning happens in front of this mirror. This one here. "Whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of hair, dyeing hair, or putting on jewelry," or those things aren't evil. It didn't say those things were evil. It just says, make sure that your adorning is this. Verse 4, "Let it be the hidden man of the heart." True integrity inside your soul. That's far more important. I have a lot more respect for a woman who has true integrity and holiness and may not understand the proper way to dress because she just hasn't seen those verses yet, than somebody who, as maybe the apostolics or the, or even some of our own, would wear long dresses without any integrity and without any holiness in themselves. I have much more respect. I believe they deserve a higher place in the house of God if they have true integrity than the other. We have to be careful, very careful. I've heard some say that women are harlots if they do this or that. Be very careful. There are some holy women of God who do not dress the same as I'm convicted to dress. As I see in all these passages and many other passages, we just scratch the surface. They're still very holy people. And I'm sure there's many things in my life that I have not understood yet. And I pray the Lord will help me to understand them, that I might change them and bring more glory to Him. But he said, "But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in which is not corrupt, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God a great price." Think of some meek, quiet women of God. Think of some holy women that you have known. Verse 5, "For in this manner also in old time, holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being subject to their husbands." I think his sister Titus was quite a woman to me. She wasn't a powerful woman, but she had a lot of authority because of her integrity. She had a lot of integrity, and she could command any group of women because she had a lot of integrity. I've heard people say, "I can't say things to people the way that person says things to people. It's because of their integrity." She had a lot of integrity. As was mentioned here by Peter, he mentioned Sarah, "Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge." Husbands also to have integrity, and he deals with all of that. But I just wanted to bring about these passages that you would know that there's not just one place, there's not just one word, there's not just one thing. There are numerous things. We often only just remember the simple ones, but these are things that our brethren have taught for a long time. We don't focus on them. They're not our focal point. Christ is our focal point. We don't preach on them all the time, but I figure I'm a lowly man, filling in for my pastor, and I might as well hit on the lowly subjects. The focus is on the integrity of the heart. These things won't make you holy, but if you are striving to serve the Lord, I believe these passages will prick your heart. I can remember being a young boy listening to my mom play preaching tapes in the house, and one of them happened to hit on the subject of dress. was running around the yard as a little boy without my shirt on, just in a pair of shorts, and I remember it pricked my heart, just as a little boy. My parents didn't say, "Mark, you're not going to take your shirt off anymore." Just the Holy Spirit of God grabbed a hold of me, and I started wearing my shirt around my yard. And my yard's a yard that nobody can see me, but the Lord just has pricked my heart. And I believe that if you desire to serve Him at some point in your life, the Lord will probably prick your heart concerning these things. They're not the main thing, but they are in the Bible. We'll stop there.